Guru Nation, welcome to episode 790 of Random Musings from the Clinical Trials Guru. This episode, I go through some of the more common jobs in clinical research, specifically CRA, Clinical Research Associate, and CRC, Clinical Research Coordinators, but also a couple others and just the basic job requirements because I realize a lot of people are still confused out there. So just a few of the basics here. There's probably a few things here as well for some of the more experienced people in the space. Let me know what you think. Let me know if I'm missing anything. Like, subscribe, comment, share. Thank you so much for listening. Really quick, wanted to give a shout out to my first sponsor, Inato. Inato's an amazing place. I just spent like an hour on there, getting one of my pulmonologists some new studies. You do need prior therapeutic area expertise, but Inato is really a free place for sites to get studies and found by some of the sponsors out there. So go check it out. Absolutely no cost, nor do they get involved in the budgets or anything like that. And the next sponsor, Creo. Thank you so much, Creo, for helping me manage my site, helping me manage my eReg, my eSource, my CTMS, my auto texting, my eConsent. They even have payment options for patients, which I haven't used. I've used a lot of their features over these last 3 years, and I still haven't used them all. Luckily for me and everyone that uses Creo, you only pay for what you use, and you can grow into it like a good yoga pose. So thank you very much, Creo. Hopefully you enjoy this episode. Let me know what you think. Thank you so much. Bye-bye. And we know we'll delve into all kinds of stuff. Live. We got David LaHaye, SOS panelist, star, superstar at the networking panel. How did you like that one, David? The SOS networking panel. What'd you think about that?
No, it was a blast. I mean, my co-panelists were just great to get to know. I actually didn't know Tiffany or Dan prior to that. I think that you and Dr. Fox did a phenomenal job moderating it. So I really enjoyed that. And I have to say, what most impressed me was Dan Otapa, hearkening back to, I think, 18th century or 19th century Danish philosophers to make points. So I absolutely loved every part of it.
Be honest, did you already hit him up for a study?
No. I mean, that's,
Ah.
I think, what is key about. I don't know. I don't want to be like, hey, here's all my cards, Dan. Like, eventually I'm going to start hitting you up for studies. But in part, being good with networking is making the conversation about the other person and not the conversation about you. So,
Yeah.
I mean, it'll come up, but it's not going to come up, right away. It'll come up, maybe a couple months from now. Well,
Yeah,
now
I
that's
haven't.
out of the bag, I may as well, Dan, if you're listening, let's just talk about what studies you could send to me. So.
Yeah, I haven't hit him up yet either, but I think I will. There's been a few big pharma that I've been trying to get a hold of. I'm working on a couple studies right now with a few of the big pharma. So it's they all have their own way now. Like when I started, it was so Wild West. And now it's not like that much improved, but they have like an email where you send things and you're supposed to find out from some magical person what that email is. And then you give them like your metrics and stuff. So it's like it is a little bit more organized, but still, there could be a lot better.
Yeah, and it's so much better to have like a live person to talk to and get active feedback, because one item that I think strangles a lot of new sites is the fact that so often, like, you send an email to something you found on clinicaltrials.gov, and then it just goes into a black hole and you hear nothing about it, and forever. And so it's just this constant, like, no feedback from anything, and then you don't know what you're doing right and you don't know what you're doing wrong, because if you have no data points to work with, then there's no way to really dial any of your actions in.
Well, if you believe in quantum theory, then the black hole does end up somewhere. It's supposed to be someplace magical. You and Chris are so similar. You and Chris are like the same. Me and Lee, one of your business partners, were like the same. Like there's like a good comparison there. What's it been like running your
Never
site?
heard anybody say about Lee. Actually, I was going to make the joke that that's the nicest thing anybody ever said about me, but
it was quite an insult, actually, David. I'm just letting you know.
What? How's it been running the site, Dave?
It is going really well. So it depends on which site you're talking about.
Yeah, you have two sites simultaneously. How do you maintain? Like, how do you do that? Like, you're actually involved in both on the operations side, or what?
Don't you have more sites than two?
No, I do have more sites than two. It's just
wow.
So the process is like I generally work above like the business, not like within the business. There's a few examples where I haven't. Like I have a site in the Rio Grande Valley here in Texas, and I was an unblinded coordinator for one of these trials, and it was just because it was early on. We didn't have the resources to hire sufficient staff to have two unblinded coordinators for a role. And so when you have a dosing event, it's relatively rare. And so it's a lot of work, but
the highest paid unblinded coordinator in the history of research, mostly
maybe the lowest paid.
One of those two is true. One of those two.
The highest or the lowest paid, right? But yeah, I mean, it's a relatively, it's a role that we needed, but we didn't have the capital to hire an additional person to do that at the time. And so, it comes down to the owner. So the way that I've managed that is, you have a couple of sites simultaneously. Usually I'd have another equity partner that's local within that geographic area that has more of a hands-on role. Okay. And then I focus on the business development angle, keeping business and studies coming into the site and making sure we get paid on them. And so that's generally the role that I've had. It's a lot more scalable than, like being a coordinator or a site director or whatnot, because, you become more valuable, not less, the more sites that you do business development for. You'll get conversations with people that you normally wouldn't be talking to if you represent five sites rather than representing one site. So that I think is really key and critical. But
do you think that works in your favor or against you sometimes? Like when you say, hey, like let's say you're doing biz dev, right? And you're approaching someone like a sponsor, you're saying, hey, I'm representing five sites. Or do you go by the strategy of you put your best site first and then you use that as a magnet for your other sites?
That is how it has functioned before. So there's a large company that we've worked with before that we've got a very strong relationship with, that we have kind of the prettiest looking site that has all of the boxes checked, and then a site that isn't necessarily the prettiest but the hungriest. So we all had the same study. The hungriest site ended up blowing the recruitment numbers out of the water, and so got the attention of the vice president of infectious disease at this large company. And we were able to tie that into, hey, why don't you send somebody to visit our site? And we're going to go with the flagship right off the bat. Not the highest performing site, but the prettiest site that is most impressive, at least, from a site visit standpoint. But, that's just kind of how things end up working out. They see our impressive flagship site and they're like, how did I not know you guys existed for so long? And then, everybody within that co-marketing tends to cross-pollinate, right? So you have the biggest, prettiest, most boxes checked site ends up benefiting from the hungriest site, and then the hungriest site that may not have all the bells and whistles will benefit from the flagship site. So that's just been how we've managed that through co-marketing. And so we've gotten a number of relationships in ways that a lot of newer sites don't get. They're more dependent upon broker services or clinicaltrials.gov. And Dan, Chris, you two are familiar with. I got burned by clinicaltrials.gov early on. The first studies I earned were from a company that starts with R and
ends with a K.
And ends with a K.
And the next letter is a O, and the next one's a M.
Yeah,
we know. We've done an entire video exposing these guys, but I guess they're still around.
Yeah, so
it's terrible.
But it's come a long ways from that, from going to clinicaltrials.gov, which oftentimes you get studies that they're absolutely desperate for new sites. And, you know, you get taken advantage. Well, I did that one time. Like, I got taken advantage of and by a company that wanted to bankroll their study. I don't know. I don't want to ascribe intent, but there was a bunch of problems that happened. And then ultimately what happened is that we ended up paying for this, you know, for this trial. And then
by paying for the trial, you didn't get paid.
That's right.
For your work.
Yeah, we executed the protocol. We
basically operated as a nonprofit for the community.
No, worse. Nonprofits oftentimes get their expenses paid anyhow.
Yeah.
Minus the.
Well, you could write it off. You could write off the loss. I mean,
sure.
Same principle.
Yeah.
Now, but finances, because the title, like, how, what do you, like, knowing now that you've been in this industry since 2020, right?
Yeah.
Knowing what you know now, is the money better or worse than you thought, or about the same?
It is. So it's both. I do have to say it's better, but it all depends on how you all depends on what you're doing and the risk that you're taking. So in 2020, so my background is I had a pretty successful career for, you know, over a decade prior to that in different like executive business development positions. And I reached a point where I'm like, this is midlife crisis time. I need to, my goal was to work 80% less, make 80% less. And
make 80% less.
Yeah. And have more time on my hands, right?
Sure.
I missed every single one of those marks. You know, I worked a hell of a lot more than I've ever had before. I made a lot more. And then I also had, no time on my hands for, I don't know if I checked all or if I answered all those.
So you were
looking at every count.
So you were looking to semi-retire, it sounds like.
It was intended to be more of a hey, this is something I can wrap my head around and understand, and I can have like more flexibility than I can when I have a brutal, you know, position. Creating new business for a larger company.
So you wanted a lifestyle business, and what you ended up finding was a honeypot with unlimited potential, basically.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah. And the avenue or the approach that I took to building companies, and this is to address your question on, is it more lucrative or less lucrative? There's a ton of sites that I know of where it's less lucrative than if you were to get a job, or you lose money, right?
Right.
Because the avenues of getting trials are generally they'll get trials where sponsors are more desperate to find people, and so it's very, very difficult to find patients. And then all of your like the revenue that you earn, you end up having to pay out to staff, and so. I think there's a certain amount of specialization. So you have to have a lot of exploration to see like an understanding of what's desired by the market. And so that's what I've, that's kind of my background. And so that's the tack that I've taken to it is like, what is desired by the market right now? What are the hot indications? And then how can, and which ones are the low hanging fruit that we can actually build systems in order to capitalize on that. So the first avenue that we took, and you guys are familiar with that, is COVID-19 therapeutic studies. You know, it was 2020, so it was a pretty good time to do that.
Hey, you're trying to get us banned from YouTube? You can't say that word.
Well, is that right? Like, they're a little more lenient on that nowadays.
I was in YouTube jail. No, I'm just joking with you.
The unspecified virus of unknown origin therapeutic trials.
There you go. Yeah.
Okay. So we were doing these therapeutic trials, and the avenue that we took was let's operationalize a COVID-19 testing center. So you have like free COVID-19 testing, and when somebody came in and they tested positive, they would then be offered the opportunity to participate in a clinical research trial. That way you have a patient recruitment funnel. And all of these trials, and this is why these studies like took so long to recruit, and many of them never even fulfilled the recruitment numbers, is because they had a window of first symptom onset between 3 and 5 days. And so you'd have sites looking in their EMR for patients that tested positive, but those would all be like, you know, those
2 weeks ago or something.
Right. Yeah. So you needed some sort of like real time enrollment process. And so that's what we did. So we first started with that. And then what was clear is that there was a significant need for more diversity within the vaccine, vaccine trials. And so I looked at my hometown, Detroit, Michigan, and I said, like, there isn't any like vaccine specialized sites here. And so we started a clinical research site, me and my business partners there. So Lee Eifler, you know him, Chris Sommerfeld.
Shout out to Lee Eifler, man.
Yeah. So Lee, if you're listening.
One of the most unique people in this space. Mm-hmm. So hands down.
Yeah. So sorry, not to distract from Lee.
Give Lee a shout out, man. And then
Lee's great.
Okay.
David, I would completely agree. As you're aware, we have a relatively large site network, and by far the most successful clients within that network are either very specialized, right? They have one indication that they focus on primarily, and they do a great job at it. And all the sponsors come to them with all their studies, right, for that specialty. And the other group that is very successful are the large multi-specialists, right, which they can take on every study that comes their way.
Yeah.
Which I think is kind of what you're describing there, right? You either need to be specialized or really have a very large funnel.
Well, when you don't have resourceful, or when you don't have resources, you have to be, you have to use resourcefulness, right? So if you're just starting out, you need a plan, you need to stick to that plan, and you need to specialize. So you don't stay there as a individual specialized site. So this has been the plan for the whole time. First, we establish capabilities in something, and then we establish command of that thing. And then once we have those resources, then we can start branching out into other specialties and then grow that site to the point where it is one of these larger multi-specialty sites that can do everything and possibly even phase one. So the example, one of the sites started off as I guess when you started off, you just need anything, right? So I can't say we started off as a vaccine specialty site, but very soon after, like within the first 5 studies, we were awarded a vaccine site. And then it's like, okay, this is where we got traction. We're going to continue to hammer on vaccines and build out our capabilities within vaccines. So we added, you know, unblinded, like 2 to 3 unblinded coordinators. We added a PBMC isolation lab. And so we've, you know, gotten like a full array of capabilities for vaccine trials. And now that we're on our, I don't know, 15th or so vaccine trial, we've added on new indications, including NASH, metabolic disorder, and pain. But that's just because the specialization gave us the resources to build out those additional therapeutic areas.
Just out of curiosity, what do you prefer, the vaccine trials or more standardized, say, oral drug type study?
You've got they're like vaccines are just a crazy world because you're fighting with the velocities and the centricities and these massive site networks in order to get those trials. So it's really a struggle to get those. And then when you do get them, you know, like you have a huge opportunity, but you have a very narrow window. So you've got to be ready for that. Like that's something to keep in mind. But like, you know, the industry from a finance standpoint, like vaccines have really made a lot of very lucrative sites over the last,
Oh, absolutely. But you specifically, do you prefer one over the other? I mean, do you prefer it sounds like you prefer vaccine trials, but they're harder to get.
It's a matter of diversification. Like, there's some parts that I absolutely love it, and there's some parts that I hate about it. So I do like vaccine trials, but there's nothing worse than having the disappointment with like forecasting a massive vaccine trial and then have it be canceled like 3 weeks prior to that. And then you don't have anything else in the hopper because you've hired in order to fulfill that. So that's really those are really challenging when you have a small company, you know, managing that. So this is what, so my avenue is, you know, we have our specialty within vaccine, but then we bring in something where the enrollment process is, or the enrollment is a much longer period of time. It's not like weeks or months, a few months. It's like, you know, a year or 2 years. So that's where, you know, pain studies or NASH trials, you know, generally it's like you're going to have an enrollment of a minimum of a year. So if something like that happens, then you can retool and do something else. So my thought process is that like vaccines don't really work well for a single specialty site. So we've bucked the trend for a while, but it's not really an ideal scenario for a single specialty site. But what we want to have is, or what we, and I, and what we built is a site that isn't dependent upon that, but you have the opportunity that when you got that vaccine trial and like all the stars aligned, that you're able to enroll, like, you know, you're able to enroll in like very, very well and have potentially, you know, a 7-figure trial that really changes your ability to grow in the future. So yep. I love having the upside of vaccines, but then not necessarily having the downside of it. And so that's where the diversification kicks in.
So your typical vaccine study, you're probably looking at enrolling somewhere between what, 50 and 200 enrollees, something like that?
So we've had some that we've enrolled zero patients in, and we've had some, like generally we had one actually in January where as soon as we got enrolled, or as soon as we got activated, they closed enrollment. So it goes from zero to, I think our highest enrolling study was 156 participants. Okay. And so those are, you know, it varies widely, but
and that number of 156 is highly abnormal for, say, a NASH study. You're looking at getting 3 patients, or maybe if you're lucky, 6 patients for a NASH study.
Yeah, if you get 6 patients, you're going to be in their, you know, in their promo material, and they're going to, you know, shout
you from the roof. You're going to have an FDA audit because you're the top enroller.
Yeah. Whereas if you get 6 patients in a regular vaccine study and you have the opportunity to recruit, you probably won't get another vaccine study from them.
Have you gone through an audit, like a sponsor or a FDA audit yet at one of your newer sites?
Yeah, we've been through quite a few sponsor audits.
Sponsor?
Still waiting on the FDA, but.
Waiting? Yeah, you can send them a letter, let them know.
Ready. We'd like to be audited. Please come see us.
Really? Okay.
So how did the sponsor audit?
I'm a little nervous there, but I think we've actually done really, really well. I think we've had we've subjected ourselves to a self audit when we like there was one study where the site in Phoenix and the site in Detroit were both number 1 and 2 recruiting patient, or number 1 and 2 recruiting sites, and so we. Mm-hmm. Like we had hired somebody to go through and do a self audit, and then we were ultimately audited again by the sponsor. And both of those.
How did the self audit, like, if you wanna, I've had this before too, but was it reasonable? The price? Did they actually find stuff that you can improve? Do you think would you do it again?
I mean, we've used a couple of different auditors, and the one for that particular study, I think it was really good. We used somebody. She was a monitor for another company. And so she came in and looked at everything just like she was doing a monitoring visit, except, you know, we paid her to be a little more specific about everything. So she went through everything, made sure, didn't do anything way out of the ordinary, I'd say, from a monitoring visit. But yeah, I mean, she caught some things. I think we did a very good job at that. And this is my observation as well, is that you generally are going to do better quality overall on higher volume studies than you're going to do on a low volume study, because it just comes natural as breathing after your coordinator's been in that same, you know, in that same exam room and conducted that same visit a dozen, 2 dozen, 5 dozen times previously.
So, do you think, shout out to Ashley Margo also there in the greater RGV area, for those that know, you know. David, how do you keep your staff motivated if you guys are constantly redlining? Well, at least it sounds like you're constantly pushing like the limits, right? like the way I do it with my sites, I always ask the coordinator, hey, are you overwhelmed? They really give me the honest opinion. I have yet to hear that from them this year or even last year. But I, as soon as I hear yes, and I validate that it's true, I'm bringing in new staff, training them, bringing them up to speed. Like, what do you do? How do you manage this process? Because you got to keep your staff happy or else they're going to leave in a highly competitive industry like this. And it costs you more to train. And so how do you like handle, how do you approach this aspect?
Yeah, I wish there was a simple answer. For the things that we do, I guess let me highlight it as well. So the challenges like that you guys pointed out, like vaccine studies are very much, are either feast or famine. And so staffing for if you're a vaccine specialty site, very, very difficult to do. So that one is like just a nut that I haven't cracked. And it is, and this is in part why it's so critical to have an additional therapeutic area, because that's going to be far more, it's going to be far easier, right? Like you could say, if you have a study that enrolls for 2 years versus a study that enrolls for 2 months, you could say, okay, we're going to deprioritize 2 year study in order to focus all of your time and attention on the other one. And then if that study's canceled, you can say, okay, let's put all of our time back into the other study. So it's just
right.
Diversification thing. And then that evens things out. So it isn't like, hey, you've got coordinators have to work, 70 hours this week, throughout the enrollment period. But I'd have to say that that is more of a question of like keeping people motivated from the site director level. And so ensuring that like the site director has the tools that they need in order to keep people motivated. But one item that's consistent through everything that, one of the tools is that I particularly love is called the Spot Award. So we have this is not my original idea. I used to work for a Swiss company that implemented something called a Spot Award, which is, it's like a congratulations to somebody who kind of went above and beyond. Like somebody came in, they were late for their visit and they showed up at 4:55 and everyone's ready to go. And someone's like, okay, hey, I'll stick around to get this done. And so they go out, they go out of the way and, do something that is really good for the company. That's really good for patient relationships. And then we have like a small, I think we usually give like a $25 gas card to that, to the person. But the big motivating factor is that we have like an encyclical go out, an email go out to everybody at the site and just, have a description of their excellent work that they did and how they.
To everyone. Yeah. Even if it's a small site, like, does it work or like with five staff or?
Yeah. I mean, with five staff, everybody still wants to recognition of.
Wow. And do you do this like regularly or just randomly, like whenever you see fit?
Whenever we see instances of people really standing out. So I'd say there's generally one per week.
One a week?
Yeah.
I gotta take notes, man. So a gas card or something similar. We do random bonuses. We try to do like once a quarter, but sometimes it's a little more often, like Christmas. Yeah. We did one on Employee Appreciation Day, which was last Friday. Just random, but we do it to everyone. But this is interesting because you are spotlighting one individual. So you're actually encouraging the others to... You're not only like encouraging the person or rewarding the person who did the good deed, but you're also encouraging the others to say, hey, you know what? Other people are going out of their way. I love this idea, man.
Yeah.
That's cool.
No, it's a freebie. So go ahead and
try it. I'll take it.
Yeah. We had one a while ago, like some of them actually turn into almost like a folk hero status. So we have an employee who ran a marathon and then came in on a Saturday and enrolled three patients into a pediatric vaccine.
Beast mode. Beast.
I know, right? So that's a. I don't know if you'd appreciate it if I showed his name,
why not? Yeah, he's a beast. He's a legend.
Yeah. But anyway, like something like that is, you know, is like, how could you not say, like, you know, that this had happened? How could you not recognize that individual for that amazing work?
So that gets a spot award too. Chris, you got to do start doing spot awards, man, for the staff at San Bernardino. Chris is very enthusiastic about this.
You're joking, right?
Well, I'm being serious, but I can see now how it's an inside joke. At Yuma Kalanico Trials, we'll do this, Dave. This
makes
is
a lot more sense in Yuma.
Yeah. Dave, yeah, Chris, we love having Chris on these episodes. It makes it more real. As we wrap up, because Brad's going to go live soon, and I'll probably jump on his pod for a little bit. The future of both of your sites, right? They're separate entities, so they don't necessarily have the same outcome. The market's hot. Are you looking at selling? Or, I mean, it seems like every site is being approached by someone, even if they're not profitable.
And David, yeah. I can't think of the name, the word I'm looking for, but Dan will think of it for me. So just an insight here. There's an interview or a pod
next week.
Yeah. Next week with somebody looking to acquire site networks,
a financier.
Really? Yeah. Okay.
Back from the Gilded Age, the financiers. but yeah, seriously, like every site, I don't even need to know anything about your situation to know that you've probably been approached. So, like, as a site owner, what are you thinking? Like, is that something worth exploring? Or are you just not interested? Would you rather just keep these for life? I mean, give us a little insight. Because honestly, I have no idea on my end what I'm planning on doing. I have, like, we're leaning in one direction, but I could easily argue the other direction as well.
Yeah. So, without getting into specifics, there's certain things where, like, partnership with a larger organization is going to give you a better stride and more mileage. And then there's other things that's going to detract. Like, obviously you're not going to have the same level of control. You're not going to have the same freedom and flexibility over the next couple of years because, you will be under a restrictive covenant. So everything has to be assessed within like a case by case basis. Right. So, honestly, like there's a lot of benefits of working within, being assimilated into a larger site network. You know, from day one, your employees all get, you know, comprehensive benefits and, and then you get access to, you know, HR, you know, finance and all those things. And, you know, to be frank, I'm not really somebody that knows like all of those items. I'm not like a finance guru or a HR guru or anything like that. So I can see there's a lot of benefits to, you know, to being assimilated into a larger site network. But I also do know of a number of people that have sold and then they have been disappointed in the process overall. And so it depends on how personal you take your business. And I know that's something that a lot of people do. They see their businesses as an extension of them. So to sell it and then have the new owners do things that they wouldn't normal that they wouldn't do, it tends to hurt them, right?
But, so the disappointment's more emotional than like financial or something along those lines. It's an emotional connection to their site that they built, and they don't like the direction in which this new ownership group is taking it. It's an emotional connection opposed to any other rational or logical type of explanation.
Yeah, I would agree with that because, so much of like, I guess if you have like the haves of the clinical research site world and the have nots, a big differentiator is the quality of studies. I think all studies have merit to them, but there's a huge difference between a study that you put in $1 million of effort to make $100,000 and studies where you put in $100,000 of effort to make $1 million. And to have access to those, you need a business development team. And it's very difficult to do that if you're not part of a larger site network that has an actual team that has the boots on the ground. They do the high touch marketing work that to engage people that will actually award those studies. Like most people are really dependent upon, you know, upon whatever a broker network that they work with, which, you know, Enotto is fantastic. I would say all of these are really fantastic tools. And I think Enotto is probably sponsoring this, right? So, you know,
they're a sponsor. Yeah. I'm on there a few times a week, but it's also, but you need therapeutic area expertise to get studies from Enotto. And that's where Chris and I come in with DSCS, where if you don't, or even if you do, I mean, we help with the, here's Lee. Shout out to Lee. We help with negotiating budgets and all the other stuff too, SOPs. I could see how selling the site could be emotional, especially when you invest. It is an extension of yourself because you build a culture. You build a culture based around like who you are, or like what your values are, I think.
Yeah.
And then ultimately it's like a hypothesis, right? The market's going to decide if your values are worth something or not.
Yeah.
And then no one's going to acquire you unless it's working. Yeah. So the market says, yes, it works. And now someone else comes along and says, yeah, we're going to change this.
Yeah.
And you're like, damn, that's like a piece of my value, but hey, it's not really my company anymore.
Yeah.
So I could see that. I could see how that. Enotto is great. DSC is great too. Absolutely.
Yeah, agreed.
And Lee Eifler, you're the man. Dude, this was such a good thing. We got to do one where all four of us are on. Me, David, Lee, and Chris. Just like a blast from the past. We used to have four-way conversations during the 2020, 2021 days. We got to bring that back because some of those conversations were classic podcasts that were never recorded.
Yeah.
I want to give a shout out to LinkedIn. LinkedIn, we've had like 29 viewers live. Twitter, we had 28 viewers live. And then Facebook, I have no idea because I can't log in, but we're broadcasting there. So I try to like not use Facebook. It's a time suck. But thank you guys both for coming on. Lee, we got to get you on, just the four of us, to do a pod. Maybe next week, let us know. But Dave, thank you. If people want to get a hold of David, his LinkedIn is underneath this video. And if you're listening in the show notes, he's a really good dude to get to know. Chris, if you want to connect with him, I think you have to go through me because he's not really like on any networks. But yeah. And then thank you guys both for coming on. Any last thoughts? Closing remarks, thoughts.
The closing remarks, I have to say, like being the Chris Sauber of Texas is quite a
Dan, I'm telling you, man, Dan meant it as an insult, just FYI.
No, I didn't.
I didn't take it that way, though, Chris, though.
And then, Chris, what's your closing remarks?
Well, I don't really have any closing remarks, but just to expand further on when I laughed at Dan suggesting these awards in San Bernardino, everybody's an owner there. And they take it for granted a bit.
Spot award doesn't count when you're an owner. You don't get awards. It's meant for the frontline workers that are
exactly
W-2 or 1099.
For those still hanging on, wondering why I was laughing at Dan's suggestion.
Yeah, Chris is not an insensitive. He's not a tyrant or an insensitive tyrant. He's not. I think about it for a second.
Can be
not.
A little bit at times, but not horribly so.
In measured doses. But thank you guys both for coming on. Listen, if you're listening or watching later, like on YouTube or on Spotify or Apple, iTunes, whatever it's called, go connect with David, right? His LinkedIn's underneath. We'll have him again with Lee. Like, subscribe, comment, share, and with Chris. But Chris is on all the time. We got SOS requests, demands that Chris get on more. So we're bringing you more, Chris, this year. All right. Like, subscribe, comment, share. Bye-bye.